Welcome to the Long-Term Investing Podcast with Baskin Wealth Management. I'm Barry Schwartz, President and Chief Investment Officer. In this podcast, we ignore all the noise and have conversations about the things that matter in today's markets. It's what we talk about with each other here in the office, and we want to share those conversations with you. Please stay tuned for our legal disclaimer at the end of the episode. How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the Long-Term Investing Podcast. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about corporate earnings from Netflix as well as Taiwan Semiconductor. We'll also get into what the heck is going on with all the software companies, and is it a legit risk or is it a great opportunity? And we'll get into that, and we'll also have a little follow-up on our oil conversation that we did last week about the impacts from Venezuela. But before we get into that, let's get into this. If you like this podcast, of course, please subscribe to us on YouTube, on Spotify, and on Apple. Baskin Wealth Management has been managing clients' money across Canada for well over 25 years. Please check out our website. We're very proud of our long-term track record as well as how we manage money. And if you want to learn more about our process and how we do what we do and how we help clients meet their long-term goals, please reach out to us and we'd love to discuss our services with you. So here we are, January, thick of January, deep freeze coming, natural gas prices up 20% this morning. Did you see that, Ernest?
Yes.
Yes. Great news for those who like the cold. Not my dog, of course, who doesn't like to go out to the bathroom in the winter.
Or your home heating bill.
No, exactly. But this is so fascinating. And part of our discussion is why you can't get so depressed about short-term moves of stock prices. We did this podcast last week where we talked about the issue with Venezuela and the potential of all this oil sands coming on board very quickly, and how the world will be awash in supply, and you know it's really bad for the Canadian oil and gas stocks. CNQ, Canadian Natural Resource, a stock that we own, I think fell about 6 or 7%. And now it's back to a 52-week high today, right? Because of this deep freeze as well as the instability in the world. We don't need to get into that. We all know what's going on there. And so now, of course, people are bidding the stock up to a multi-year high, right? So this is our process. This is our style. We stick with good companies that we know are going to be cash flow positive, that are going to be growing, that have the acumen, the ability to withstand, sustain and during tough times. And this is what CNQ does. It's a great business, well run, and we're not going to sell it because the price of oil goes up or down in the short term. We're going to stick with it because we like what the long-term approach the management is taking to growing all its metrics per share over the long time.
Right, and I think that's why, even though as investment managers, we are kind of benchmarked against for the stock price performance, what we really try hard to do, or try not to do, is to let ourselves be influenced too much by short-term stock price movements and try to backfill a narrative into why a stock is up or down. Because that's what really, you know, that's how you get into trouble. When you see a stock price going down and then you look for reasons why the company's in trouble and then convince yourself that maybe you missed something about it and that you should sell the stock, when in fact it's just kind of normal course volatility.
So, and let's get into quick specifics about it. Okay, so with the CNQ, right, the news was that because the U.S. may get the Venezuelan oil sands back up and running to full production, maybe that will happen in a short period. Maybe it'll take a long time. Maybe the world will need more oil in the future. Maybe the world will need less oil. Maybe Canada will look to sign deals with other countries to start selling our oil and gas, something that we just saw recently where Carney seems to be getting a closer relationship with China.
Right.
Right. So you just never know. So one of our hallmarks, one of our guiding lights, our North Star, is that wonderful things tend to happen to well-run businesses.
Yes.
And in the short term, as long as you can withstand the volatility, And that takes, patience. It takes really understanding what you own, trusting our research, our convictions. And we're not going to give in to what the market thinks in the short term unless it's really showing up in the fundamentals or we're really seeing that the business could be, lesser value in the future.
Right. Well said.
Yeah. So that's our style and that's our approach. So we want to talk about, as always, when companies report earnings, either the stock price is going to go up or down.
I think just before we move on, I think to this point, I think on Constellation Software, this is a name that kind of has dominated the discourse lately, just due to how quickly the share price is dropping.
For sure. And it's one where we've owned for a long time and clients have had a terrific long-term return. And the stock just seems to go down every day.
Right.
And I see people are commenting on our YouTube and podcast and Twitter, like we're the experts on every single stock and we should know that every single tick we should react to and what's going on. So let's talk about that.
No, so I think I think the kind of the obvious bear case or fear about Constellation is that now you have these new AI coding assistants that can not only generate code, but also where you can ask where it can create the entire program for you without kind of any human interference. And the worry is that maybe in the future you won't need Constellation Software products at all.
So you're kind of, I mean, and anything can happen in the future, of course, right? It's kind of like, we used to watch movies on DVD or CD, right? And then it all went to streaming and the companies that made the DVDs and made the CDs completely irrelevant, out of business, right? And if they didn't adapt their business to the new way of doing things, they're gone, right? And so as investors, we have to determine whether a company like Constellation Software or whomever is going to survive and adapt in a changing world environment.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about this before, but I think, long story short, I think that it'll be harder for AI to displace Constellation's solutions because the challenge of creating the software is not the cost of writing the code. It's the implementation of the solution inside the business, the customers, kind of the integrations that are built around it and the switching costs that are embedded, for example, in a pulp and paper plant, like the disruption that it takes to switch vendors for something that's a fairly small cost of the overall cost of running the plant.
That is correct. That was always the appeal of software. What you're doing is you're outsourcing the maintenance, the research, because you don't have the time to develop it in-house. You don't have the acumen, the ability. And then there's always changes in your industry, right? Whether it's regulatory changes or updates or how you have to change your billing or changes with the tax situation. Like, you name it, there's so many things that happen and you rely on your software provider to react to those changes, to make those updates. I don't care how they do it, whether they use an AI coder or an actual person. What I'm paying them for is kind of like they're an employee that's providing this service that I don't have the time or the ability to do on my own.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the first part. And the second part is whether Constellation can continue to make acquisitions at the pace that it has in the past, which has kind of always been the worry about Constellation as it grew larger because the amount of acquisitions that it would need to do is just, it grows every year. Yeah. And so I think on that front, they've made some moves to drive that, and we'll see how it goes. We'll see how M&A goes this year, but they've created a new operating group.
I see they're still making acquisitions. They're not, they haven't said we're stopping making acquisitions in software because of AI. And I think you would trust a management team who knows software and sells it for a living that they're not that worried, so we don't need to freak out either.
And also they've started to look for acquisitions outside of software as well,
which is not a new thing, right? They've always talked about that.
So I think we'll see how that goes. And so I think for Constellation and for kind of software in general, really reminds me of the early 2017 period when auto parts and auto parts retailers such as AutoZone, O'Reilly, they sold off because of worries that Amazon was just going to take over the world.
And so you would buy your auto parts from Amazon. Right. It ships to your house. You don't have to go to the store.
Yeah. 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 And the share price fell like 20, 30% in many cases because Amazon was announcing initiatives in auto parts. Like they signed deals with retailers. They were like adding the inventory of wipers and those kinds of things on their site. But what ended up happening was that Amazon ended up did obviously becoming a very successful and dominant retailer, but the auto parts retailers themselves managed to adapt it.
Okay.
And their business models ended up proving more resilient than people thought. And so I think that with a lot of software companies that will end up kind of having a similar situation.
Yeah, I mean, our take at the moment is I think AI is going to unlock so much productivity.
Right.
And it's going to replace nuanced and grunt work tasks. And as a result, you're going to be paying someone or something for these services. Our takeaway is possibly some software will become irrelevant.
Right.
Possibly some software will become even more mission critical. Possibly some software that you're paying for, you may use more. You may pay, they may come up with other services to sell you that improve your productivity that you haven't even thought about. And so it's too early to make a decision. The stocks react well before the news. And that's why, so when a client will say, oh, Constellation's down, it's not unique to Constellation. Every company in software has been beaten up. And so it's really a bet on, do you want to own software companies going forward? But then you have to look at what type of software companies, what do you think is going to be survive in this day and age or even thrive, right? Maybe there are softwares that could be completely eradicated by AI, but...
Like language learning software.
Where these Duolingo, for example.
Right. That's a software that is completely one-to-one replaceable by AI. There's no switching cost. There's no integrations with other software. And it's very, very easy for you to to use AI.
I just feel that as humans, we need some certification. We need stamps of approval. That's why Moody's exists. Yeah. That's why FICO exists. You need a certification. And whether it's Adobe or Constellation Software, these are going to be the certifiers that you're using the right product going forward for your right business, and you can feel comfort that it's being maintained for you. Like I said, we don't care how the sausage is made. And okay, fine. Maybe great news. Maybe we'll be paying less for some of these softwares. The stock prices of a lot of these software stocks have already fallen dramatically. So the market ain't stupid. Maybe it's already priced in what's going to happen, right? And so that's the bet you have to make going forward is all the bad news priced in? Is there any bad news even in that stock? Is the market completely overreacting? And obviously it's up to us as portfolio managers to follow the news, to pay attention and to make changes when appropriate. But when the fundamentals of the software businesses haven't at all been impacted.
Right.
That's the sad thing. I think
that's the unusual thing.
Unusual, yeah, right? Yeah. Usually stocks fall for a really good reason.
Yep.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
on AI, we had tremendous, we switched away from a data software company to buy Taiwan Semiconductor.
Yep.
That turned out to be a terrific trade. And let's talk about Taiwan Semi's earnings, as it certainly gave guidance that AI demand for its products is like off the charts.
Yeah, I think there was basically no bad news in the quarter, where I think sales were up at the... I have the figure here, but they were up 25. They expect sales to grow 25% through 2029.
So 25% a year.
Yeah. per year.
On top, that's and this is on top of the tremendous growth that it's already had up until 2025. Yep. Yeah.
And as a result, they're going to be raising the amount of capital that they're spending on new fabs to be able to meet the demand for AI chips. Mm-hmm. I think one of the kind of the key themes that dominated the discussion about TSMC was, like, how sure are you that this AI-related demand is going to be there for you to fill all these fabs?
That's right, because they're spending, I think Taiwan Semi is looking to spend $100 billion.
Over the next few years.
Over the next few years on building plants, fabs, foundries to support the growth and demand for chips.
Right.
Yeah.
And basically the CC Wei, the CEO, he said, well, yeah, like we're spending $100 billion. Of course, we are super careful about how we're thinking about this AI thing. And we really think it's real.
Yeah.
Like all the companies that we're talking to are showing us the work that they're doing with AI. And they're very confident that the demand is going to be there to support the capital that they're spending.
Not only that, he also mentioned that his customers are seeing actual benefits from the investments in AI.
Right. I think Facebook was the one that he was referring to.
Yeah, but they're seeing, you don't spend $100 billion without expecting a return on it. Like, that's insane.
Right.
Right. Maybe you spend $100,000 to throw it away on a speculative thing, but you're a multi-trillion-dollar public company. I can't fathom that you're that stupid to throw $100 billion away on something that the demand's going to go away in after everything's built.
And that was kind of the skepticism for semiconductor-related companies in the past, which is that it goes through all these cycles where when chip demand is hot, companies build too many fabs and then demand goes away and then there's oversupply in the industry. But because now we're in a situation where essentially there's just one company left, they are being much more prudent and rational about adding new chip manufacturing capacity. Even as the sophistication of the technology required is increasing as well. So I think that, long story short, I think everything's going really well for TSM, and I think they're doing a great job managing the business.
An interesting point about Taiwan Semi, of course, is even though the stock has done really, really well the last few years, the multiple you're paying for earnings hasn't budged because the growth is catching up to the stock price movements, and that's give or take.
So maybe, again, like this is just somewhat a backfilling narrative of the stock price performance, but I think one of the things that we came to realize after we owned the stock was how much we were just kind of talking ourselves into not owning a great company trading at a very reasonable price before we bought it. Because we followed TSM for a while and we knew it was kind of a dominant player in what they did. They have good financial returns on the plants that they're investing in. They have good margins. But we said, well, you know, maybe China invades Taiwan and we lose our money, right? Mm-hmm. So we came up with excuses to not own the stock, but failing to recognize that it's a little bit more complex than that. Like the company themselves are working to mitigate these risks, and that sometimes if you see money on the ground, then you should probably pick it up.
I think so. Speaking about money on the ground and the stock price reacting to a narrative that we think completely doesn't make sense is Netflix, right? Killer year for Netflix. Let's ignore the Warner Brothers acquisitions for a moment. 22%, I think, earnings growth year over year, double-digit top-line growth, 325 million subscribers. That's up 100 million since the pandemic. Right. Everybody said when the pandemic happened that's it. They peaked with the subscribers. We're all at home. There's nothing else we can do.
Yep.
And here we are a few years later and they've grown the business by 50% more.
Yep.
And the world has obviously, somewhat come back to normal. It's never normal. But you get the point is great results for Netflix. But because it's involved in this Warner Brothers acquisition, that's really the narrative on the stock. And everybody's ignoring the strong fundamental results.
Well, I think that with Netflix, I think the worry is, well, first of all, like they grew well in 25, going to grow pretty nicely again in 26 with, I think, 13% sales growth, 16 or 20% profit growth. So clearly very strong results.
Margins are up.
Margins are up. But kind of the worry is that viewership is not growing. Mm-hmm. I think viewer hours were up only 2%.
There's only so much time in the day.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of the I don't know the right word, but the quirk in the cog in the machine, which is that, is Netflix simply just harvesting more of the goodwill that they've built up with the members by raising prices, launching ads, and those kinds of things? Mm-hmm. And I think Netflix kind of said within, it was a big point of emphasis in the earnings call where they said, like, you can't just look purely at the hours per member and conclude that people like Netflix less, because it's a lot of things to consider. Number one, like, what types of content that they're watching, right? So people are watching more Netflix originals than mm-hmm. third-party content, which is a good thing for Netflix.
Very good thing, right? Yeah.
And then you have to consider things like geographic mix, because people in the US are watching more TV than people in Japan. So if you add more Japan members, then the viewership is going to fall. Mm-hmm, and so there's all these kind of different...
Oh, that's an interesting point. Yeah. Yeah, so get it. So you have to... The data is not clean.
Right, yeah. And so they said, like, based on the key metrics that they're looking at, which are kind of churn, retention, and member satisfaction, however they want to define that, they still feel really comfortable about where their business is.
And apparently lots of people are downloading and playing the mobile games that they offer. Right. And so that
on TV. Yeah.
And there's more to come. Right. The plan is that people will play more things on TV, that there'll be better video games, more live sports, more live events. Netflix is becoming a better business every single year.
Yeah. So what I love about Netflix is how everything that they do is always tied back to how it benefits the business and ultimately is making more money for the company. Mm-hmm. Because so for instance, with the games, they launched, they've been working on games for a couple of years now and to mixed results, mm-hmm. but they started launching these kind of party games that you can play on your phone where you use your phone as a controller connected to the TV.
Yeah, so you have friends over and you all play this interactive game.
Yeah, and that's all nice and fine.
Yeah.
But what they said is that what they're seeing when they launch these games is that people are engaging more with Netflix, right? And they're retaining better. And that's true for things like live events that they've released on Netflix as well, where it's leading to people who were maybe going to cancel their subscription now retain a little bit longer. And so I think that's all good news again for Netflix. We'll see what happens with this Warner thing.
So the timeline of the Warner Brothers deal, first they're looking to... Warner Brothers looking to spin off its cable business as a separate company, and that could take up to a year, right?
No, so right where we are right now with this is that I think Paramount made a bit of noise about mm-hmm. about the whole process and why Warner should have chosen them. Mm-hmm. And so in response, Netflix changed its offer to all cash, mm-hmm. so no longer any stock component.
And I think that's a smart thing, given that Netflix shares have also fallen right. since it made the acquisition. And as a shareholder, we think the stock is significantly underpriced right here. Whether or not the market agrees with us, we'll check back here in a couple of years. But the bottom line is, as a shareholder doing the math, I'd rather them borrow the money, take on a little more debt, than give up my shares at a much lower valuation, especially when the business is firing so well on all cylinders.
Yeah, so I think right now, I think most people expect that Paramount is probably going to come back with a revised higher offer. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. We'll see whether
There's no need to even worry about the steps. Bottom line, though, even if Netflix wins the day, it's still going to take 12 to 18 months to close this deal.
Right.
So will the... someone may ask, okay, so why even fool around with this? There's no catalyst for 12 to 18 months, right? So what's your answer back to shareholders of Netflix? You know, get out now and maybe get back in 12 to 18 months.
Well, I think there's two things. Number one is that, like we already talked about, the core business is still doing really well.
Yeah.
And I think that almost everything that they're doing is great from a business perspective, like the technology that they're doing, like they're kind of remaking their mobile app again, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They're just so far ahead of everybody else in streaming. And then secondly, I still think that this deal for Warner is fundamentally misunderstood by most investors in terms of the opportunity that Netflix has.
We think Netflix is actually stealing Warner Brothers right. at this valuation. It's like we're so excited that it will go through, but
so I don't yeah. see any reason why I would want to sell the stock, yeah. given that all the things that they're doing we like as shareholders. Yeah. So that's kind of how I would. And again, like we're not really playing trading in and out of the stock based on catalysts. We're long-term shareholders in a company that we like.
Beautiful, beautiful. So that sums it up on Netflix and Taiwan Semi. And I hope you got some insights into our thoughts on software and what we're thinking about in terms of Constellation Software. You know, in the stock market, any company can stock price can fall in any one year yep. by a whole hell of a lot. And you may feel it's unprecedented, but in my 25 years, this is how it goes. This is what I've experienced. I've experienced stocks in our portfolio that have fallen 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80%.
Yeah.
Sometimes they recover, sometimes they don't. I can't tell you for certain that Constellation Software is going to go back to all-time highs tomorrow, but I can tell you with certainty that we feel the stock is extremely attractive at these levels. And so we'd be idiots to sell it. Whether or not we're idiots a year from now, we'll come back and let you know. But this is how we judge our companies. And if the fundamentals look like they're moving in the right direction, the valuation is attractive. We all know companies can adapt. We're gonna stick with them. And so we'll see you back here real soon. And let's hope for a little less destabilization going forward and maybe some more warm weather. Thanks so much for joining us. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and any forecasts on the economy, markets, or individual securities should not be viewed as investment advice, a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Clients of Baskin Wealth Management and the speakers on this podcast may own shares of the companies discussed. Information on this podcast is current as of the time of production and is subject to change. If you have any questions or would like to subscribe to these podcasts, visit our website at baskinwealth.com.